It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics. I am your host, John Clark. With me, as always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And we have auxiliary co-host, David Redfield.
Sober this time.
And comic book historian, Joe Pakovitz.
Hello, hello.
This is the exact same group. This is basically the big core group.
This is the core group.
When everybody is...
But not the Thor core group.
No. I think it was the Thor core group, actually.
Oh, really?
It was, well, this is the
this
group,
was the group,
this is the group that reviewed Dark World.
That's true.
True. So, okay, so we are the Thor core. So
we go. Really, we got a grizzled John today.
Yeah, I lost my voice. How was everyone's Thanksgiving? Did everyone have a good Thanksgiving?
It's honestly, and this might not be agreed upon everyone in this room, I love Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is my greatest thing in the world this week because it's a celebration of food, and I love it. Food.
I hate Thanksgiving more than any day of the year. Thanksgiving is like church that lasts for 11 hours. That's Thanksgiving.
You know what the difference
is? It combines
is?
Everything I hate. It combines...
Pilgrims?
No.
Modern. The massacre of the Indians.
It combines turkey that I don't like to eat.
I like turkey.
Chicken and I don't like turkey. It combines football that I don't like to watch. And it combines large family gatherings that I don't know what to say.
Oh, see, this is the difference is because I just show up and then I eat a big meal. And then I drink a lot of beer and I watch.
Well, your family sees each other all the time too.
This is also true.
Like you guys don't have to get together. I can't drink that much because like it's old people I don't see that much. And now I have kids, so I spend a lot of time doing kid maintenance.
Yeah.
While my wife talks to everybody because she likes these sort of things.
Socializer, yeah. So you're keeping an eye on making your kids aren't wrecking.
She's a good socializer.
Making sure your kids aren't wrecking other people's things.
Yeah, she'd be on the podcast more if she gave two shits about what we talk about in this room. She's been on like twice, and it was usually to tell us we were out of control.
See, I feel lucky. We don't have family here, so I don't have to put up with that.
Yeah.
So we just have a small dinner, and I drink too much, and then I go to TARDIS. And that's it.
Oh, yeah. That's the good. Other well, that's our topic.
Yeah, that's the big thing. We have a few topics. Everybody, it's funny, because we were, Steven and I were saying this week, I don't think we have a topic today, and I know we don't have a special guest. And then it's like nothing big is happening, but Joe went to Chicago TARDIS, and he's actually going back in the morning. We're taping this on Saturday night, and I thought you wouldn't be available this week, so we would do it next week. And then also Dave and Steven and Joe are all excited that Infinity, the big Avengers story that Jonathan Hickman has written, Avengers crossover, had just wrapped up this week. I read all six. I don't know what's going on, but but we'll get into it. I also lost my voice because after my wonderful Thanksgiving, as always, I got into bed and my cat, who is now a single cat, because his brother passed away 2 weeks ago, was looking for somebody to fight with. And his brother's no longer around to fight with him. So he got into bed after I turned out the light. And
Kato attacked you.
He did.
Sneak attack.
Kato.
Not now, Kato.
He must test my skills. And all I did was turn out the light and I heard.
And that's like, horrifying.
It's
like a horror movie.
Usually what happens when he does that, I have the light on and I take a comforter and I drop it on his head. And by the time he tunnels out of the comforter, he's gotten it out of his system. But I didn't know where he was and I didn't know what the comforter was.
So that can come from anywhere.
So he slashed up my arms really, really good. I like grabbed him by the paw in the dark and threw him. and he's my best friend, so do not tell me I'm a bad animal rights thing. If you saw how much I was bleeding, you would
wouldn't
side
feel bad.
With
I don't
me.
Feel bad at all.
But apparently I was screaming at him so much that's 2 days later and I don't have a voice. So you guys can do a lot of the heavy lifting, although I kind of like this. This is
the grizzled John?
Yeah. It's like
I have always wanted a grizzled voice, and I sound like a 12-year-old boy.
Yeah. I always wondered what Max from Heart to Heart would sound like on our podcast.
That's Joe Pekovitz. He's that doll face. I always felt like that guy in Heart to Heart was like Jack Kirby.
Yeah, kind of. He's a Jack Kirby.
He's like punching with dots. Amazing.
He's got five fingers.
So, Joe, why don't you kick us off? Because you have the freshest memory.
This is the freshest thing.
Yeah, well, Joe and I went to Chicago TARDIS last year right before we started the podcast. So it was about a month before we started the podcast. And I thought it was amazing. And this year, since it was the 50th anniversary, it sold out so fast that I'm not able to go.
Yeah.
When did you get your tickets, Joe?
I actually renewed the first day of last year because I knew it was the 50th. So I got there at registration. I said, so how do I sign up for next year? I said, come back first thing tomorrow morning. So I went to the registration desk and threw my plastic at him and said, take my money.
Yeah, I was I was working freelance and I'm like, I'll get it. And last year I just walked up to the desk.
Yeah.
And I had to pay more than if I had reserved it. Sure. But I was like, I don't care. And I went one day. And it was really fun. We talked about it actually when Jimmy was here because we were talking
the
convention conventions. Yeah.
Yep. We talked a lot about TARDIS. But how was it this year?
It was super packed. I mean, as you might expect, when I got there Thursday night, Thanksgiving night for the guest reception, the line for ordinary registration tickets was already down the hall and around the corner, which was nuts.
That's crazy.
And It was rivaled only by the line at the Target across the street for the Black Friday,
sure.
Which, of course, all the British guests, because Doctor Who is British, all the British guests had their cell phones out taking pictures of all the crazy Americans lined up in front of Target on Thanksgiving.
What time did it start?
It started Thursday.
Uh-huh.
Registration opened at 6 o'clock, and the guest reception was at 8 o'clock.
Okay.
So around 7:30, the Brits are all laughing at all the people waiting in front of Target. And then we had our little reception, and then it started in earnest.
It's like, 200 years ago, the Native Americans had dinner with you, and now you have to buy Hoovers at midnight.
Right. It was like, so what are they giving away over there? Nothing. So why are all those people standing out in the cold at 8 o'clock on Thanksgiving night? It's a national holiday. It's like buying holiday, right?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. So why are they standing out there? Well, they're getting really good deals. So they were supposed to spend today being thankful for what they already have, but now they're all going to knife each other to get more.
Right.
That's exactly what happened.
That's a great way to look at it.
Were there 4 fatalities this year for
and
Black Friday?
That's why I dislike Thanksgiving.
No. I wrote on...
I say Black Friday is separate from Thanksgiving.
I like Black Friday.
Thanksgiving's one day. Black Friday is another holiday.
I like Black Friday. I feel...
They're blending into each other.
Yeah, but everything. Everything from Halloween to Christmas.
There's two things I like about Black Friday. Is and I wrote these as comments on other people's posts, and I was like, "Damn it, that should have been
those are jokes." That was good jokes.
I was talking to Mike Lawrence, and he was talking about Black Friday. Is it? I like Black Friday because it's the one time of the year Amazon becomes eBay.
Yeah,
because I've been watching Amazon every hour. We got new microphones for the podcast coming.
Ooh.
Thanks to Black Friday, we got a new pair of headphones.
Thank you.
Coming.
Ooh, so Joe's not
Black
using
Friday.
A 10-year-old
set. Yeah, that also has the shortest cord.
Yeah.
So we have, I was trying to get mic stands, but the discount wasn't that great. But we're going to get new equipment for the pod because of Black Friday. Ooh. And the other thing is when people fight and kill each other, I consider that population control. Because if you're dumb enough to get into a fight to the death
over
a television.
Yeah.
I don't care how heated it is and how packed it is. One of you can walk away at any moment.
Yeah.
You are deciding to be in that. You have gone into the octagon.
Committed to the death.
Yeah. You're not like, hey, I had my hands on this TV and this guy knifed me in the eye. It doesn't just happen.
I guess you could also say like these people are partaking this, and if this is going to offend somebody, like, good. it is population control, and you're controlling the worst parts of the population.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah.
It's
survival of the fittest.
Yes.
And the fittest don't go to Walmart at midnight.
Right. Yeah.
But Joe, let me ask you. There was a lot
Back
of British people.
Well, the guests were British.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about just like
all the doctors lined up.
It was the doctors and the companions and the BBC people and the Big Finish people were all lined up by the windows taking pictures of the idiots outside Target while we were all watching them do this and laughing our asses off.
Yeah.
But speaking, that's actually a pretty good segue into the fact that because this was the 50th, it was insane. I mean, usually with a convention like this where it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Fridays, there's a buzz and there's energy. Saturday is the huge mega crowded day where everybody shows up. And then Sunday is relatively quiet. And, you know, usually it's a good day to collect autographs and things like that.
Yeah.
One thing I did notice, there's a lot of outer staters at this. I'm obnoxious. I talk to people in lines where I happen to be or standing next to them at the vendors' tables and things like that to find out where they come from.
Yeah.
A lot of people from Minnesota. There was a Minnesota mafia there.
Wow.
A lot of people from Kentucky, Arkansas, Michigan, Iowa represented. It was, I mean, and all of them said the same thing. It's the 50th. It's like, yeah, my wife wouldn't let me go the last 3 years, but this is the 50th.
Yeah. So yeah, they're not going to be around for the hundreds. So.
Right.
You know, all right.
Never know.
Well,
modern. A lot of the doctors weren't around for the 50th. I don't think we'll be around for the 100th.
And it was good. I mean, they really did pull out the stops. The Chicago TARDIS did a really good job this year of getting the guests. They had three doctors. They had Peter Davison, Colin Baker, and Paul McGann, the fifth, sixth, and eighth doctors, for those of you keeping score at home. And for the companions, they had Louise Jameson, who played Leela. They had Sarah Sutton, who played Nyssa. They had Daphne
Ashbrook,
who played Paul McGann's companion, whose name I cannot now remember. And they had Fraser Hines, who played Jamie for the second doctor.
Wow.
So that's going back a ways.
And most importantly, they had Nicola Bryant.
I left the best for last.
And we had this argument. Was it on the air? Was it off the air? About who the most beautiful companion was. And I think that Nicola Bryant as Perry is more beautiful than Clara, than Jenna Louise Coleman, or Karen Gillan as Amy Pond. And Joe was saying, you're crazy. Now Joe has met her and has come back and...
I've been converted. She is amazing. I mean...
Yeah. She's got to be in her 50s.
She and Paul McGann apparently have their own TARDISes because they went back to the 80s and got their younger selves and sent them to this convention in 2013 because they have not changed at all.
Oh, that's wild.
Paul
McGann looks fantastic,
beautiful.
Too. Yeah.
And Paul McGann looks like he did the... I mean, he has shorter
handsome.
Hair. That's about it.
Yeah. He looks what?
He looks handsome.
Handsome.
Well, that was a great thing about... I've been watching Luther because you're Mr. Idris Elba and it's infecting me. Watch Pacific Rim again, too. I showed Ben Pacific Rim.
How do you like it?
He loved it because
course,
he's six.
Yeah, because he's six and it's a movie made for 6-year-olds.
And I use reverse psychology. He goes, "What's that?" And I go, "Oh, it's this movie. You don't like real movies because he won't watch Iron Man. He won't watch Star Wars. He won't watch Harry Potter." I'm like, "Well, it's a real movie, so you won't like it." He's like, "Well, what is it?" I was like, "Well, just giant robots fight monsters for the whole movie, so you don't want to see." I do want to see that.
That's awesome.
And then Idris Elba comes
on. He's
still
the age where you can do reverse psychology.
Yeah,
but
he hasn't hit down to that yet.
But Paul McGann's in the first season of Luther, which I'm watching now. And when I saw him on them, I'm like, "Oh my god, why isn't he part of the 50th?" And then that was the best surprise of the whole 50th was that YouTube clip, the internet video he did that we talked about last week.
Yeah, the five-ish.
Which I think gave his whole doctor a shape. You saw the beginning and the end.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so easy to fill in that middle.
Yeah, yeah. Night of the Doctor, and then you had Day of the Doctor, which you really needed to have Night of the Doctor first, I think, to make sense of a lot of what happened in Day of the Doctor.
Which one did I see?
You saw Day of the Doctor.
You saw Day of the Doctor. You saw the actual special.
Yeah.
And we told you about...
Night of the Doctor.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a five-minute clip. It's on the Cabinet of Comics Facebook page.
And you also
Along with a lot of your pictures...
Yeah,
I just saw today Joe was gracious enough to post all the pictures he took at Chicago TARDIS.
The best of them.
Onto the Caffeinated Comics Facebook page. So there's another reason to go and like us there. Great pictures of pretty much all the doctors, all the companions.
Yeah, because all the doctors, all the companions, but also the cosplay people,
yeah.
The people who dress up. I mean, anime fans have the wildest outfits, but Doctor Who fans, I think, have the most creative outfits and some of the best craftsmanship. Like there are people walking around in Cyberman suits that you would swear were production that somebody stole from Cardiff from the BBC.
Yeah.
Same thing. There was a girl dressed as a Silurian who,
a
I mean, you couldn't
woman.
See, all you could see of her that was human were her eyes.
Oh, the one
it
that
was amazing.
Showed me. Yeah, I thought it was like a, whatchamacallit, I thought it was like an actor. I thought it was like one of the people from the
show.
No,
this is a fan.
But this was like a fan made this, and it looks incredible. Like they look like they're off. They like walked off the show.
Yeah, and this is what our buddy Lauren Geek Girl Chicago does.
Yeah,
and you ran into her.
I ran into her. She was
Rose Tyler.
Rose Tyler. Thank you. I couldn't think of the name. I was thinking classic companions. No, she was Rose Tyler. She did a very good Rose Tyler. I am criminal in that I did not get a picture of it, but on her blog, she has a picture with her and this little girl dressed as a weeping angel, which is a villain from Star Trek.
Yeah, I saw that picture. That's cool.
You have to see
this
picture. It is adorable.
And she's doing interviews with the doctors and
tomorrow
this weekend. Yeah, she put out a poll on Facebook to ask her questions, and we got a couple of entries. So check out her blog this week because she's going to have an even more inside track than Joe did.
Yeah, right.
Was there a lot of fan interaction with the actors?
Yes, each session with the actors was, first of all, they went out there and the moderator would ask them a few questions and have a little banter going on, but most of it is Q&A. So, you know, the fans take the mic and they ask a lot of questions. What a strange thing that I noticed, maybe not so strange, is that for the classic Doctors and Companions, the average age of the person asking the question was probably about 40 to 45. Mm-hmm. For Freema, and I'm going to butcher her last name,
Agamemnon,
the average
played
age
Martha
of the
Jones.
Of the Martha Jones in the new series.
Much easier name to say.
Yes, thank you. The average age of the question asker was probably 16.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. I think there's a clear divide between Classic Who and Modern Who. And I think for the most part, the people that are into Classic Who were into it when it was modern. Right. And you see the same thing with Star Trek. There's a clear generational divide between people who are into original Star Trek and people that were into Next Generation. I kind of fall in between because I got into Star Trek with the movies, which is about 5 years before Next Generation. But I think Doctor Who falls along the same lines. You can go back, obviously.
Yeah. And that's one of the heartening things that I found talking to some people. There were two wonderful young ladies from, again, Minneapolis who had come down. And one of them was dressed as a weeping angel. I have a picture of her that we posted on Facebook. But I got to talking to her on Friday when she wasn't in costume. She was in costume today. And this is the changing face of geek culture. I mean, we talked with Geek Girl Chicago about this quite a bit, but these two girls really embodied that because they started off with the new Doctor series and she's working her way backwards. So she was able to speak intelligently and articulately about what she likes and dislikes about the various companions and the various doctors. Like, oh, well, this series, I didn't like it because they didn't treat the woman companion this way, and I like this companion because she's strong and she's smart and she doesn't scream or run away in terror. And this companion, I kind of like her, but she's kind of a little soft, and this one's too in love with the doctor. So I think a lot of these, to me, they're kids. I don't mean to demean them, but these younger
people.
But
you're the oldest man in the
room. Yes. But I'm an old man and I yell at
clouds.
What
are you talking about?
Damn clouds! Anyway, but they are working their way back. They are exploring the crevices of the culture and going back in time and finding a lot of the things that we like. So, now there's hope for the kids yet.
Yeah.
And speaking of people who didn't like this season, you said you went into a panel that Dave Redfield should have been attending.
Dave, you should have been. It was called Moffat's Girls. And boy, man, I don't know. His ears are burning.
Moffat Girls?
Moffat's Girls.
Girls that are fans of Stephen Moffat?
No, the way that he cannot write women to save his ass.
Hell yeah, he can't. Oh my God, are you serious? This happened?
Yes. They
I would have moderate the shit out of that.
No, but they made good points. I mean, and most of these were the women and the even the young girls who were probably college age or younger were picking up on this. I mean, they're looking at the series now as potential creators, which is probably the most awesome sign for geek culture in general, that maybe these women are our next wave of creators. I mean, we've already had people like Jill Thompson who've kind of, mm-hmm. you know, pioneered the role and went where nobody's gone before. And, well, the first producer of Doctor Who, of course, is a woman. But we've had these isolated pioneers. I think maybe we're going to start seeing some surges of younger women writing and creating, which I can't wait to see this.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Yeah, because, like, you know, when you're during Amy Pond, like, I think she has one of the best intros into being a companion. Mm. But as soon as Rory hopped on, I was more interested in Rory's story than Amy's.
Oh, Rory became more interesting.
Yeah,
very
I was just
quickly.
Like, it took a long time. It wasn't until, like, they did The Girl Who Waited. That episode when you see, like, you know, Carrie Gillan's character, Amy Pond, she ages like 30 years.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's great makeup in that, too, because she really looks middle-aged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Amy doesn't quite get the shaft that some of them do, but...
Oh, and some of the classic companions.
Well, no, to Moffat.
Horribly.
Moffat, they're kind of plot devices and puzzles first and only characters second. Amy, you learn about her almost incidentally in between her being a MacGuffin.
Yeah.
And Clara never becomes anything really but a MacGuffin.
Right.
The impossible girl.
I'm hoping with Capaldi coming in and Clara being the one constant is that we'll see her more as a character, because we're gonna need her to introduce the Doctor to us in the same way that Rose Tyler introduced David Tennant to us, yeah, and a lot of classic companions. Perry went from 5 to 6, and
one young man who actually sold all his possessions and he's going to become an actor, to whom I wish him very good luck. He made a really good point. He said Moffat didn't take very long casting Capaldi. He knew he wanted Capaldi from before. You know, they casted the hell out of Matt Smith, but Capaldi, it was instantaneous. And he thinks that what they're looking for is a contrast between Clara and Capaldi's Doctor.
That makes a lot of sense. I do feel that Clara was not cast to work with Matt Smith. I think they knew Matt Smith was leaving. Where Amy and Matt Smith were cast together, and they were cast as a team.
Yeah, Clara can talk as fast as Matt, and she brings that energy and that kind of wide-eyed sense of adventure, right, whereas I think the Capaldi Doctor is going to be more acerbic and world-weary and irascible, and they're going to play off of that.
Yeah.
And I'm perky companion. It's going to be like a Batman and Robin type of
I'm
dynamic.
I'm looking forward to that. Like,
and it also removes a lot of the temptation to make Clara go, oh, doctor.
Romantic.
Because that ruins almost every... The only series that I've seen that work at all was with Rose Tyler, because that kind of made sense. But even go back to the classic series, when they start, you know, getting attracted to the doctor, it just gets either creepy or it just doesn't work at all as an emotional plot device.
He is like 904 years old. Yeah, he's now 1,040.
And he's a different species. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like he should not be attracted to human beings.
And even Freema, somebody asked her, you know, so what did you think about your character falling in love with the doctor? And she flat out said, that's not the way I would have gone with that character.
Yeah.
Take that, Russell T. Davies.
Yeah, of course, it was completely unrequited.
Oh, yeah.
In her season.
I mean, but I think it's at least interesting that when they do cast a side or a companion, or they cast a doctor, they have to think, okay, how long are we going to have this companion? How long are we going to have this doctor? Like you said, it's like maybe they even had the foresight. They knew they wanted this new guy, and they were like, they didn't cast Clara for the
for
last
Smith,
guy.
They casted her for Capaldi.
Well, you know what they said? They said when they cast Matt Smith, they were looking older. They were going to go older than Tennant.
Yeah.
And then Matt Smith blew them away in the audition, so they decided, all right, we'll go even younger. But I'm wondering, when they said we wanted to go older, were they thinking of Capaldi then?
Probably. I can't imagine. I mean, who else would do it? And that's one thing that Colin Baker said. He's like, you look around, and obviously the doctor is going to be a white British man of some kind.
For now.
And he said, well,
Idris is getting
ready.
They're always going to be British. It's like Bond.
Yeah. And Baker even said, he said, well, they could have gone with Cumberbatch, but that's basically repeating a lot of, you know, Smith and Tennant.
I feel like, you are repeating them.
Yeah.
And he said, "Who else are you really gonna
get
for that role?"
You know, Sherlock started not long after that. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm sure he read for both.
Yeah. Could have been.
Yeah, because I do remember that going all over the internet. Was they were like, "Oh, he should be the doctor. He should be the next doctor." And as soon as they said they were gonna do a new one, and it's like, you heard all kinds of people getting thrown around. It's like, you know, he's so popular, he's all over the place. Of course, his name get thrown in there too.
Yeah, Peter Davison was making fun of all the lists that they were making of who was gonna be the next doctor as soon as Matt Smith, you know, announced that he was leaving, and he was just rolling his eyes as to people's names they were throwing out.
Well, they always say that. I mean, that's why we've had the argument on the show many times about how Steven's like, Idris Elba should be the next James Bond. I'm like, the next James Bond's not going to happen for 8 years. Daniel Craig has 2 more on his contract. They take 2-3 years
he
to
could still
do.
Do it.
Yeah, but it's like, why even talk about it at this point?
Yeah.
You know, and it's always somebody that you hadn't really thought of.
Yeah.
Before anything.
Yeah, it's good. It's like an unknown or somebody that just comes way out of left field.
Yeah, because when it is somebody that, when it's the fan favorite, like the only thing I can think of is Pierce Brosnan as Bond. When it's the fan favorite, the results were kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
He made that first movie great.
But then couldn't sustain.
After that, yeah, it could not sustain.
And, you know, one of the favorite panels that I went to was Peter Davison talking about 5-ish Doctors that he wrote and directed and basically made. I guess that he was already started with a handheld camera, and BBC got wind of it. And they said, hey, you know, if you need a little help, send us a script. We'll see what we can do. And I guess he sent them the script, and they just loved it. And that's how he got all access. And he kind of said,
"Have you guys seen it yet?"
It's on, isn't it on the Caffeinated Comics?
It is on the Caffeinated Comics Facebook page, but that doesn't mean you click play. We have had so many plugs for the Facebook page.
Plug away.
It's a great Facebook page. It deserves to be plugged.
He got everybody.
He got everybody. In fact, they asked him.
I love the stuff when they went to, when they shot those scenes during The Hobbit.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Great. Peter Jackson and Ian McKellen are in it. There's a scene where Sylvester McCoy is like, basically, it's all the classic doctors are demanding to be in the 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
And then they try to sneak onto the set, and that's the plot. So they call Sylvester McCoy, and Sylvester McCoy will not stop name-dropping The Hobbit.
That's awesome.
And he's like, "When I was working with Peter Jackson on The Hobbit." Yeah. And then they call him in his trailer in New Zealand, and they're like, "Can you do it now?" He's like, "Well, I'm waiting to be called out of head with it." He flies back to England, and there is a scene of Peter Jackson and Ian McKellen going, "Where did Sylvester McCoy go?"
Yeah, and originally that was just supposed to be the assistant walking up to Peter Jackson and kind of whispering in his ear, and then you hear Peter Jackson go, "He went where?" But when Peter Jackson heard about it, he happened to give it an off mention to Ian McKellen, and Ian McKellen forced him to do that scene because Ian McKellen's like, "I want in."
Yeah. Well, Ian McKellen was in the last year's Christmas special. Yeah, I totally forgot.
He does
a voice in it. He's not in it, but he's already been involved with Doctor Who.
Yeah. I just like that joke when he's like, "Well, we'll do it just without Sylvester." And he goes like, "Oh, Peter, I think it would be better for
that." he's in full Gandalf makeup. He's like, he's sitting on steps on the set, waiting.
Yep. That was great. Yeah. His daughter helped produce it. Like, she actually produced it. And his
daughter's married to David Tennant.
Yeah,
David
Tennant, the daughter, if you watch the episode, The Doctor's Daughter, that episode when he gets cloned.
Yeah, that's her.
Yeah. So I just think that's crazy because if you also see, because the BBC will do these charity shorts for
Red Nose Relief.
Red Nose. So they did one with David Tennant and his was like, you know, it was before that, the Titanic one, and Peter Davison shows up and David Tennant goes like, you know, "You are my doctor." And I think that's crazy. It's like David Tennant's favorite doctor is his father-in-law.
Yeah. Yeah, how cool would that be, huh?
That's why I liked when it's like, "I still have one last connection." He wouldn't be a man with a Scottish accent, would he? He's like,
yeah. Well, Peter Davison said that the worst part about gathering people were the agents. The agents were the ones who said, no, he won't want to do that. And he said, you know, they did a lot of like, because, you know, it's a pretty close community.
Yeah.
So they would go to like cons and have somebody from the con call the actor directly. That's how they got, who was he saying? Was it Barrowman?
Yeah,
Barrowman's agent was like, no, I'm putting up this big stone wall. And when they got somebody else to contact Barrowman directly, he was like, "Screw that, I'm on."
Yeah, Barrowman
does a lot in it too.
That's a bad agent.
He does like 2-3 scenes.
Well, I mean, they probably didn't want to piss off the BBC.
But you know what? They probably also get a lot of crazy bad requests. Like I'm imagining agents are like fielding the Galaxy Quest type requests.
Yeah.
Like, we want him to be in our garage and pretend he's the doctor.
The job of an agent is to not make the star seem like an a-hole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's what the job is.
The job of a press agent, definitely.
But that kind of backfired on them, though, because, here's Peter Davison putting this thing together and everybody's on board.
Cool. I'm just surprised that, like, he didn't just hit him up with a tweet. It's like, "Hey, you want to be in this thing? What do you say?"
Then it goes public.
Yeah, but
he couldn't talk about all that. He said the most frustrating thing is he couldn't talk about a lot of this stuff because there was this big question of, are these guys really in the 50th?
Yeah.
Or are they not? Mm. And he couldn't say anything.
Hmm. Well, and they all lied. They were, Paul McGann put out that press release that was a complete lie.
Yep.
He said, "I'm really angry that I'm not in the 50th anniversary and there should be more." And he had already made the interview.
He already made five-ish doctors.
Yeah. So Moffat was telling everybody to lie.
Yeah. He did say that one of the last things they did was they filmed the scene where Moffat at the end is going over the editing. And he's knocking out the Daleks. And he said, all of a sudden, Stephen turned to me and said, "Wait a minute, I'm the villain in this piece, aren't I? And David was laughing, and I was like, you just figured that out?
And David's dreams come true.
Yeah. He's right the there. Villain.
Everyone knows
He's
it.
He's chilling like
now
a villain.
Now that people know it.
Now that they know.
So, Joe, you're going back
We're
tomorrow?
We're going to have to send the Avengers
I am
out
going
after.
Back tomorrow, yes.
And what's on your agenda tomorrow? Are there any panels you want to hit?
I didn't get a lot of time to spend with the Freema panel because it was time to start getting home and my camera battery died, so I couldn't take any more pictures. So yeah. I'm like, drop the mic piece out, you know.
I'm done.
I'm done. So I'm gonna go to her. There's a couple panels that I would like to go to. Some of the best panels though are not the big name stars, and I'll give you a case in point. I put on Facebook how they make that TARDIS wheezing sound, you know, and it's basically a piano, and you just take the piano strings and put it upright, and you kind of scrape the piano strings.
They show that in an Adventure in Time and Space. Yeah.
Yeah. And but they had Dick Mills, who ran the sound studio for the Doctor Who show in the 70s and 80s. He was hilarious. A lot of the big stars, they've heard every question and told all of their stories so many times that you get this kind of sense of it's by rote.
It's material at this point.
You can't surprise them. You know, they have it down. But the lesser-known guests like this guy or the guy behind-the-scenes guys, number one, especially the guys who are retired now, there's no skin in the game. They can offend anybody they want. They can tell all the stories they want about so-and-so farted on this and, you know, caused a problem. And so this guy came on, and he was hilarious. In fact, they had a big thing on the I've just been, like, strafed by Colossus here. They had a big thing about the music. And this one guy couldn't get his music to sound right. They had that awful keyboard music, and it's incidental music. And so they had just had this big, huge keyboard synthesizer thing installed. And Dick Mills said, "Hold on, there's a button called Option 4. And you hit these notes, and I'll find the right place on Option 4, and then hopefully that'll give you the sound that you wanted." So Dick Mills is going down there, and there was a button called Option 4 on this thing. And he's twisting this thing, and finally the guy got the sound that he wanted, and it was fantastic, and he said, "Oh, yeah." And 30 years later, he meets him at a convention in Australia, because this guy was Australian, he moved back to Australia. And the guy comes to him and goes, "Dick, I really want to thank you for your help with that, you know, series of episodes, that Option 4, man, that really saved our bacon, didn't it?" Dick's like, "Dude, when they made the synthesizer, they drilled an extra hole in it, and rather than have a hole in their synthesizer, they just put a button on it and called it Option 4. It didn't connect to anything."
Hilarious. Yeah. Those old Moogs, too. There's a great documentary on the Moog synthesizer on Netflix. And those things were like, before digital was like the first synthesizer, they were analog synthesizers. And they looked like switchboards. They were just like, they were plugging like, you had to plug like cables into different things. And they were oscillators. And nobody knew what any of them did. And they cost like $10,000, and nobody knew what they were. But the intro to like Bob O'Reilly and Won't Get Fooled Again with Pete Townsend playing with a synthesizer for a day. Those things were nuts.
Well, plus you could do so much stuff with even the primitive technology they had. He told you how to make a round of music sound, because each of the pieces of incidental music, even the theme song, was really 30 seconds. Well, how do you stretch that over an entire credit sequence? You repeat it. Yeah. Well, how do you do a good job of repeating it? And they did this thing with tape, where you put tape stretch it from one machine to another machine, two separate machines, and you put a recording of it in the middle of that, and it picks it up as a separate sound. So by the time it gets to the second tape, now there's two of them.
So now, as
you play it,
cool.
It's doubling each time. So, and then you just figure out, well, you know, and then somebody asked him, "Well, how do you figure out when to stop?" And he said, "Well, we got out the tape measure. Because it's all on tape, and they figured out how long the tape had to be."
That's like the original, in that time period, the original delay pedals, the original echo pedals, were tape machines. And you'd plug your guitar into a tape machine. And it would
that's crazy.
And it would record like 10 seconds, maybe. And then it would just play it back. And they're worth $1 million now. It was called the Echoplex because Jimmy Page used one, because that's all they had. So people have to use what Jimmy Page has. And that basically became what Reggie Watts does now. you know, with Reggie Watts will layer his voice on top of his voice on top of his voice live.
Yeah, but you learn stuff like that, and you get some cracker stories from these lesser known guys. So yeah. Don't ignore, just because someone doesn't have a big name, don't ignore their panel. Go, because you'll probably get stories you won't hear anywhere else. And you, if you're not careful, you might actually learn something.
Yeah.
So it sounds awesome. I'm sorry I didn't go this year. I really enjoyed it last year. But let's switch over. We'll stay in space, apparently.
Space Lord Mother.
And the Jonathan Hickman's Infinity crossover wrapped up this week, and Dave and Steven have been telling me about it the entire time. And then anytime I said to Joe, Dave and Steven keep talking about Infinity, Joe goes, yeah, because it's great. So I'll preface this by saying I loved Hickman on Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And I know I've said this on the show before, but I'm a huge Fantastic Four fan. So when he went to Avengers, I'm not as big an Avengers fan. I was like, oh, well, I respect him. And then you guys were like, gotta read this. Now I've read Infinity. I have not read all the tie-ins.
Did you read any of the Avengers, like his first run?
Nothing.
Like, oh, you haven't
read anything?
I went in blind.
I read Infinity 1-6, and that's how I felt. But honestly, that's kind of how I felt a lot of his Fantastic Four run. He's almost, Hickman's writing is almost like Grant Morrison without the crazy.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, I don't know who these characters are. I don't know what they're planning. I don't know where they're going. I don't know why we switched scenes just now, but right. I'm sure we're going somewhere. And I need to read, I bought the omnibus from Steven.
Yeah, I just finished rereading the Fantastic Four omnibus.
How is it reading it straight through? Because I read it month to month and I was always a little confused.
It ends with Black Bolt returning from space, where he had been since like Annihilation, I guess, back in like 2000, 2001. Mm-hmm. And it's easier to read because it's, you're getting more of the story right away. I read it like over 2 or 3 days instead of the 6 or 8 months or whatever it would have been to read it normally.
I think it was like a year and a half. Actually, that's probably huge.
Yeah.
Were the FF issues connected into it too?
Yeah. By the time,
does Johnny come back in that?
No, Johnny dies close to the end.
Okay.
And then they switch to FF.
And there will be a volume two.
And then volume two will have the return of Johnny Storm, the Fantastic Four coming back and doing the FFF Fantastic Four simultaneously in the order, I believe, that they were
released initially.
So they'll make sense. But yeah, Hickman's tricky because it's like you said, he's got all these high ideas and it's not like Grant Morrison where I feel like I need a college education to understand what he's talking about. Because
or lots of drugs.
You need that too, I think. It's like he's doing something where I just feel like, well, at the end of, like, I read his new X-Men, and a lot of that stuff, I'm just like, well, I'm just not smart enough to get this, or I haven't done enough drugs to get this.
I did find with his Batman run is when I read everything again, when I got the hardcovers, and I started from Black Glove straight up, it made a lot more sense than it did as a monthly. So that's why I want to read the omnibus, Hickman's omnibus, because I read it all as issues, and I bought the omnibus to have it on my shelf, but I haven't read it.
The other thing that helps, too, is when you reread these issues, you see the setup that he's been building for a long time. Like you were telling me in the Fantastic Four, he meets someone. And
I was
like,
rereading Fantastic Four in early in his run. It's after he does his Dark Reign miniseries. He does an issue where they get in a fight with like the Wizard, and Reed, they pull him out of like this machine he's in, and he says these words. He says something like, "The universe is broken," which is something Hickman has gone back to. He's mentioned that in his S.H.I.E.L.D. run that was very brief. He mentioned it in his Avengers run predating Infinity. He mentioned it in Infinity. He's mentioned it in New Avengers. So it's clearly he's playing a long game. He set seeds in his first couple Marvel stories knowing the end game of where he wants to take
it. Well, they said when he pitched Fantastic Four, he pitched them his entire run.
Yeah, oh, so I'm sure.
He walked in knowing he's like, and then a year later, Johnny's going to die.
Right.
And then he didn't know it was going to split into two books because that wasn't his decision.
Yeah.
But he knew, he was like, Spider-Man's going to join the team and mm-hmm. Dr. Doom's going to join the team and we're going to have the kids. He knew it all. So yeah. I'm assuming he knew all of Infinity when he wrote Avengers number one.
That's insane because if you ever get a chance, you should read his Fantastic Four in the FF run, because you're just talking about volume one and I know more about volume two, and some of that stuff is just insane.
Yeah, it goes
nuts. And it gets great because like, Epstein joins the book, so it's a beautiful looking book. I mean, he just
He has some very good artists on it.
Great artists after another. Jagoda does some of the stuff.
Yeah, they don't stay long, but they're all very, very good. Yeah. I liked Eagle Sham in the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. He's great too. And yeah. He's something I enjoyed all the way in the 90s on Green Lantern with...
He did a lot of fill-ins in No Man's Land. That was the first time I saw him. And on Wade's Captain America.
Yes, he did.
Yep. But I think it's just insane to think that he's got these such long-visioned ideas. And it seems like now the formula is... If you're the big writer at Marvel, which I at this point, Bendis is kind of like the...
He's starting to abdicate
that
throne.
Weird uncle who won't leave. Yeah. Yeah. And Hickman's kind of like the new interesting guy everyone's reading to the point where it's like...
And Fraction's a little inconsistent. He's much better at ground level than he is big.
Right.
You know, his Hawkeye is amazing.
Yeah, but his Thor
Iron
is a mess.
Man, his Iron Man was one of the most incredible
runs
I've ever read on that book. But his Fantastic Four, he had a premise and no story.
Yeah.
So he's... I don't think he's going to be the center of the Marvel Universe.
No.
And it might be Hickman.
I think so. And it seems like, you know, if you're the big guy at Marvel, you're writing... At least in the last 10 years, you're writing Avengers. You're typically writing two Avengers books, which Hickman is, and you're doing the big events.
Well, if you're the biggest guy at any company, you're doing their top-selling book, and right now that's Avengers. If you're DC, you are writing Batman, and you're Scott Snyder right now.
Right.
So and it's pretty much established. Scott Snyder is their guy now that Geoff Johns is more of a management
executive. Yeah, and that's not just DC. That's industry. Batman is the... Probably the leading book in the
Well, they're giving
right
him
now.
A weekly Batman series next year.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And I'm going to pull it. Yeah. You're going to sell Batman me all Infinity. 52 issues of Batman Infinity because I am a Batman whore.
But at least with Infinity now, Infinity teases a lot of where it kind of ends and it's, all right, Thanos we took care of, the Builders we took care of, but there's this bigger threat on the horizon.
I appreciate that it ended. There were a lot of crossovers, especially Bendis's crossovers.
Absolutely.
Where that final issue was doing nothing but setting
up
the next crossover.
I was just going to say, Hickman at least has a beginning, a middle, and an end. You can see the wheels within wheels, but each individual story arc like this has an end. They wrap things up.
And what's nice, too, is it doesn't balloon into like a Black Snyder and Age of Ultron where it's so many issues. This was 6 issues. And he used, instead of making it 12 issues, he had the auxiliary titles Avengers and New Avengers kind of fill in some of the other details, which I thought were kind of auxiliary details, but it appears like since John didn't read them and was a bit lost, you really do need those.
And you have to get the preludes, too.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're not going to know what's going on.
I was a little lost, but I wasn't as lost as I thought I would be, because actually the recap pages really helped.
They do,
And all they were, instead of what they usually are paragraphs... He just pulled out key panels.
Yes.
And I'm saying it's obviously not Hickman. This is editorial making those decisions. But they pulled out, I would see 2 or 3 key panels from Avengers and New Avengers. And I'd be like, okay, I can keep going.
Yeah.
And I'm probably missing a lot. But I came away from that story thinking it was a really, really good, probably the best Avengers versus Thanos story I'd ever read.
Yeah.
And if I didn't look any further than that, I was satisfied because. My problem with these Marvel crossovers, we've done one a year for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And every single one of them is billed as, this is the biggest thing ever. This will shape the Marvel Universe.
Yep.
They all think it's going to be Secret Wars.
Yeah.
And you can't have a universe-shaping event every goddamn year.
Yeah, because it's...
Because then you just have a universe
nothing
that
gets to solidify.
That's not, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I think the only one that really did, there were two Marvel did since Disassembled, which kind of kicked off everything. And House of M was one, and that got retconned eventually, and Civil War was the other.
Yeah.
And that got retconned eventually.
I would disagree with you about Civil War. House of M definitely got retconned.
Yeah.
The central premise of House of M got retconned of like, we only have 198 mutants, so
right.
We got mutants. Civil War, I feel like, ended, but it didn't end in Civil War. It took 3-4 years
to
end.
It changed the status quo, I think.
Yeah, but it
because
didn't. But
there were underground Avengers running around, then it set the premise for Dark Reign.
But I don't want to use the word retcon for it because it didn't get wiped out of existence.
It still happened.
It still happened, and they're back to normal now.
Yeah, but I think even in
moved on from that point.
They're running around. Remender
they didn't validate it,
right? But Remender's got Scarlet Witch running around in Uncanny Avengers.
Yeah, I heard
and
she's
it's something
back.
That comes up repeatedly. Is she decimated the mutant population? So they still talk about it, even though the numbers aren't quite in the billions like they were. But they're no longer as endangered as they were.
But I think that this is we're going to have to get used to this every year. There's going to be a yearly event.
I picked up a Marvel previews?
No, it was one of their Marvel Focuses or whatever that they called it.
Yeah.
And it was on It was from like a couple of years ago. I picked it up at the 10 cent sale that we went to.
Yeah,
and it was and
Keith's Comics in Schaumburg.
Keith Comics in Schaumburg.
Nice store. Yes, had a 10 really cent nice sale. Store. And instead of doing inventory, like you're going to have to do,
yep.
they just went, screw this. Everything's 10 cents. Take it out
liquidate
of my store.
Liquidate everything.
Yeah. They liquidated,
This was from 2009. And they were actually congratulating themselves on having a big event like this every year.
It's the sale.
And when I read it, because they listed them all in order, when I read it, I'm like, they're just going to keep going.
Oh, yeah.
And well, it totally explains 2010, 11, 12, and now.
Yep.
Well, it's just like, it's the summer movie is what they're trying
it's
to
the blockbuster.
Get.
Doing
it's a blockbuster event. In the summer. When this Avengers run started, I mean, I just thought this was awesome. Even before Infinity, remember when we were talking about issue one?
Yeah.
We're just like, because in issue one of Avengers, Hickman's Avengers, they bring in like the movie Avengers. So it starts off with Hulk, Black Widow, Hawkeye, Iron Man, Captain America, and Thor. And then the thing is they just start building a team. So like when you're reading Infinity, it's hard because there's all these people that are all of a sudden Avengers. But during Hickman's like his first run, he explains why they build a team. And it's just like Captain America and Tony Stark. And they just say, you know, greater threats, greater means. And you see like the first
That's how they built the new Avengers in Bendis' first issue.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know, they show you like the core Avengers go in to take care of scenario. Doesn't work out. Luckily, Tony Stark and Steve Rogers build up plan B. And then Captain America goes to Earth and he just brings more Avengers.
Yeah.
There's just like
throw more Avengers at the problem.
It's just like it's just that classic.
Those
scene.
Democrats, they're tax and spending Avengers.
It's
a classic. Problem, they just throw more Avengers at it.
And the no problem they can't scene. Solve.
It's just like Tony goes, like, I thought you were gonna bring all of them. I did. And then you see a portal open up and everyone comes out and they just smoke them all in
and
like
usually,
three issues.
And I always liked historically, like with the Avengers, they always try to keep the always taper down the roster to like about 7 to 8 guys.
Well, now they don't have to because they've built
right.
all these sub teams, so they have all threat levels covered. If it's a local problem, fine. Send the Great Lakes Avengers. Don't who cares? If it's a mid-sized problem, we'll send this team. If it's a Galactus-sized problem, then we get the core Avengers and some role
hitters,
players.
Yeah,
and all these teams have their own books.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, so and that's the other thing is there's two or three different Avengers teams running around. So you got the Illuminati is running around in New Avengers, taking care of problems that are too big or morally ambiguous for Captain America say
too
to handle.
Too smart.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
You've got the main Avengers team led by Captain America, which is Hickman's book, and that's the biggest team where it's, like Dave said, it's
everybody.
The group six
but,
movie Avengers, but then balloons up to about 15 or 16 different members depending on how big the threat is.
And they
then you got Secret Avengers.
Yeah, then there's Secret Avengers
there's
with
Mighty
this,
Avengers.
Hawkeye and Black Widow.
Avengers AI.
Mighty Avengers, which is a new book. Avengers AI, and then Uncanny Avengers, which is a mutant.
How many Avengers books is that? How many was that?
That's five or six.
Five or six.
But I
and
feel
we're
like
missing a few.
They just toss out that Avengers name, because if you put
it
Avengers
sells,
in any book, it's going to sell.
This
but
is
like,
why Avenging Spider-Man
came out. Like I said, my DC analogy, there are 14 Batman titles.
Yep.
And I'm at the point where if I miss a couple of issues of a Batman title I don't like, it starts to bother me.
Well, how would you?
So how many Avengers fans are like that?
How would you compare Hickman with you mentioned Scott Snyder. How would you compare like the two main guys at each company?
They're very different. I think Hickman is closer to a Jeff Johns than a Scott Snyder. Scott Snyder writes horror stories and he writes gritty stories. I can't see Scott Snyder writing the Justice League. I can't see him writing.
I think it's tricky because Hickman,
cosmic stories.
Hickman seems like he's getting the jobs he wants. He'll get he gets Fantastic
he's playing
Four.
To his strengths.
Right.
Mm. You're not going to give Hickman Superior Spider-Man.
No.
You're going to let slots.
And then
there.
Snyder will do Batman and he'll knock it out of the park. And then it seems like DC editorial will be like, we need another hit. You need to write a Superman book. And Superman Unchained's a mess.
Yeah,
and
I did not hear good things.
And that was supposed to be like the big book to make everyone like
that,
back
and Superman. Then Man of Steel tie-in, and they brought Jim Lee back because, you know, now
and this
they,
is actually the second time they've gone from a Batman project to a Superman project hoping to have the same success because Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee knocked Batman out of the park with Hush, and then they're like, oh, okay, well, Jim Lee still wants to draw Superman. So then we'll have him and Brian Azzarello do Superman and do the same thing, 12 issues, and he ran it into the
and
ground.
And then All-Star Batman and Robin was supposed to be Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee reteaming to do a sequel to Hush.
Right.
And then they got Frank Miller. And instead, I saw this on Comic Book Resources, and I almost emailed it to you guys. Jeff Loeb had it planned out so far that it was supposed to be 6 issues of Jim Lee and then 6 issues of Art Adams.
Ooh.
And Art Adam, they're on comicbookresources.com now. You can find
pages for it.
You can find pencils of Art Adams of Batman fighting Man-Bat.
Oh, that's cool.
And in fact, I downloaded it and ran it through like Microsoft Paint to take out the blue line and to pump it up and make it look like it was inked. And I want to make it my wallpaper. Maybe I'll put that on the Facebook page, but I'm definitely emailing it to the three of you guys.
Yeah, I think that's something that's really interesting is, you know, we were talking about the companies behind the scenes, like, oh, this is how the companies run. This is the political side of the companies. But what's interesting you don't really see, and I was talking to Doug about this at the shop today, is you get a lot of, like, Age of Ultron's a great example. Age of Ultron was a book that they teased 5 years ago that they started work on 3 years ago that Hitch probably did 10 issues of. But they only released 4 of his issues. And then the book takes a right turn and becomes something else entirely.
Well, they squeeze Angela in it once the lawsuit was settled.
Well, that's what I'm saying is they clearly changed that, whatever that story was supposed to be, changed it into a time travel thing and then a backdoor for to get everyone ready for Infinity. And I think it's the what we don't see or what stories didn't happen. And it's like they're never going to – we'll never know. You know, the closest we ever get to is the Civil War hardcover lists Mark Millar's original pitch for Civil War. And it's insane. It was like we were going to get the Civil War. In 6 or 8 issues, we were going to get the entire Civil War, the death of Captain America, the return of Thor, the real Thor, the return of Captain Marvel, and the Hulk returns with an army of Hulk children he gets from raping like a galaxy. And
basically Planet Hulk was part of Civil War.
And then Greg Pak or Tom Brevoort was like, this is too much. Okay, you can have a Thor, but Straczynski's, we've got him bringing Thor back, so you can have a clone of Thor. You can bring Captain Marvel back, but make it a small role because we're going to use him for the Kree Skrull thing later, the Secret Invasion. And then the Hulk thing's interesting. Take the rapey parts too out, rapey. Mark, because too rapey. And then make it another crossover.
Yeah, but then Greg Pak hit it with Planet Hulk, so let him write
World
War
He
Hulk.
Was doing Hulk really well, so they
and
gave
World
him
War
that.
Hulk
That's a great
out.
Story.
Was
the next year.
Solid, yeah.
Yeah, and that was those Romita penciled that. That was a great, and it was another thing, 8 issues
you
or so.
You know something I realize now? I'm looking at my oversized hardcovers, and I had every oversized hardcover of every Marvel miniseries up to AVX, and I've sold them all. Mostly to the store.
Yep.
All I have now is Civil War because it's important, and World War Hulk because I really like it.
Yeah, Romita did great work on it.
But you know, you were comparing it to comparing Hickman to Scott Snyder, and I said he's more like a Geoff Johns. I'm surprised we're not talking as much about Forever Evil. I read the first issue of Forever Evil and the first issue of Infinity. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I think I haven't gotten to 2 and 3 yet. But we were discussing this in the store. It's a great premise.
Described the premise to me.
Yeah, the premise is
the crime syndicate
wipes out the Justice League, and the only people to defend the Earth are villains.
Yeah,
which is why we had the villain one shots, which did phenomenally.
Yep,
and which is also why all the other books are tying into Snyder's Zero Year, because they're trying to set all their heroes in the past and buy themselves some time.
Yeah,
but and you have Geoff Johns and David Finch
is drawing it.
And I'm not hearing anybody talk about it. I'm not hearing it on the internet. And are you hearing it in the store?
Yeah, it's weird. Like, Infinity did not as good as Age of Ultron because I think Marvel exhausted people with 2 big crossovers this year. So Infinity's numbers are probably lower than what they would have been if it was the only crossover this year. And DC, for Forever Evil being technically their big crossover.
It's their first crossover of the New 52 as well.
Yeah.
So they haven't had one in 2 years.
It's selling out, but it's not...
It's not huge numbers.
I thought that whole entire Justice League versus the other Justice League versus the Dark Justice League, I thought that was their first crossover.
No,
but that was a couple of titles. It wasn't the modern crossover is, which is I call the Secret Wars model. We do a limited series.
Yes. Uh-huh.
That's the main title, and then all the regular titles.
Yeah,
tie
DC's
into that.
Done a few crossovers between their other books during the New 52 since it's come out. They've done all kinds.
Well, it's been more event-driven. It's let's do all Zero issues.
Right. No, I'm saying like Superboy all tying to Superman, Supergirl, and
Titans.
Oh, yeah,
but there'll be just one story.
Right, and it'll just be those characters. This is their first miniseries
standalone. Batman Death of the Family and Night of the Owls
all
the Bat titles.
But this is their
first...
Which
is why I have every New 52 Bat title.
Right, because you needed them.
Because Catwoman crossed over in 13, and I don't have 1 to 12.
Right.
But
so bad.
It's not my basement's getting full of long boxes. But Forever Evil, I want to go back. In fact, I think I might just buy them.
Yeah,
I want to go back. But is Forever Evil are the numbers of Forever Evil comparable to Infinity?
No, and in fact, we
you're ordering
we
less
ordered
copies?
Lower than we ordered on Infinity, and they did sell out. And DC's a lot better than Marvel. We can get stock back from DC. We can get back orders and actually get the stuff back in because they have a reprint policy. And it's still just not selling as high. And it's like you said, no one's talking about it on the internet.
Yeah, why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think I really like the idea. I've been saying for a while.
Have you read any besides like?
I've read the main three issues, and what I've read, I've always liked the Crime
Syndicate.
So you're ahead
of me. Are you still enjoying it?
Yes. I like the Crime Syndicate as characters. I think there's interesting things Geoff Johns is doing with them in the story. I'm typically more of a Marvel guy, but I like team books, so I really like Justice League, and I've always liked the Crime Syndicate. So I was really surprised actually, because I didn't see this coming. I didn't think they were going to introduce them, and I read the Justice League War, whatever they called it, and when they show up at the end of Justice League War, it's actually like, holy shit, like that's the crime. Like, you don't expect them to use characters like that, because
they're so silver age.
I'm constantly expecting DC to just pull some 90s garbage on me that I'm always just waiting to be disappointed.
You live your life in fear of 90s comic stuff.
I think it's more of like it's like impending disappointment. I'm just like, no, this is gonna disappoint me.
So it's more of a dread.
It's dread. Because when they don't do it, I can just go back and read Hickman's Avengers and be pleased that it's what's sad is.
So what do you think? And I'll open this up to everybody. What do you think is keeping Forever Evil, which you're saying is a good book,
yes,
which is starring everyone, which has a premise that everyone in this room goes, that's really interesting, which has top talent on it.
Yep.
Who is
who's the artist on Forever
David
Evil?
Finch.
David Finch, who kicked off New Avengers.
Yeah, he Back kicked off Bendis. New Avengers. He did Blockbuster in the Ultimates, was a big deal. I'm not a huge David Finch fan. He's not bad, but he doesn't draw anybody with foreheads.
Yeah, he was doing Dark Knight for a while.
He doesn't draw anybody with like proper eyesight.
That too. And he does
they all wear
he does
glasses.
Nice, he does like nice stuff from time to
thick,
time, but I'm
thick
not
lines.
I would have much I mean, there's other artists at DC I would have much rather have seen on that book. There's other artists, Marvel I'd much rather see. But he is top talent for sure. I mean, right. He's getting top talent.
He's A-list.
Absolutely.
Right. So do you think there's a fatigue to the new 52? Or do you think I know the public image of DC is not great. And
it's not positive,
and
yeah.
We've talked about this. We should probably do a whole show on New 52. I was very excited about the New 52. I bought every number one. And what the New 52 has done for me 2 years later is I buy a lot more Batman titles than I used to. I used to pick out the best Batman title and buy that.
Yeah, but I think...
And now I'm buying a lot of Batman titles, but I don't buy anything else. And I used to buy Green Lantern.
Yeah.
I would buy Flash occasionally. I would buy Justice League occasionally.
But I think before it was easier for you to say, oh, I have to pick and choose Batman issues because there's 900 issues of Batman. Now it's...
They're all number 25. Yeah.
And it's just like you can see yourself getting them all. And I think...
I buy Catwoman.
Yeah.
Because it's tangentially connected.
Right. And I think that's something where it's much more different. And I feel like DC had a great shot to, I mean, you got to give them credit for the relaunch because nothing had been done quite like this and may never get done like this again.
And they never had sales like that ever. They never beat Marvel consistently.
Not like that.
The history of the company.
Yeah.
I wasn't the Green Lantern stuff when they did a Sinestro War. Wasn't that best-selling book out of Marvel and DC?
Yeah, but
DC was always second to Marvel in terms of overall.
Like, they'll release the top 10 books every month.
Since the days of Stan Lee and Jack Kirby.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. They'll release like a top 10, and it's a smattering. It's Marvel, it's DC, but then the big pie chart is Marvel's more than 50%, and DC and the other guys kind of make up the rest. But
yeah,
every September since the New 52, DC's got the biggest pie share.
DC has always been Burger King.
Yeah.
Well, I've learned to pick my New 52 titles. Now that it's been 2 years, I've gone back and said, okay, Wonder Woman. Speaking of Azzarello, great. Those books are amazing.
Phenomenal. The Wonder Woman book is probably the best thing going on in DC.
But, I mean, Flash.
Is Azzarello still there?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
At issue 25?
And when Cliff Chang is drawing Wonder Woman, it's just gorgeous.
Lights out.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
That's another one of those books that it's not even New 52 wide, but I put Mark Waid's Daredevil and Matt Fraction's Hawkeye in there. Read a few issues, loved it, never picked it up again because the character is just not on my
radar.
Yeah,
that's interesting. You're really character-driven, artist and writer-driven. I'll follow a great creative team onto a book I don't care anything about versus, you know, because there's really good Hawkeye stories. There's a lot of really terrible Hawkeye stories. Yeah. Same thing with Thor.
I never even consider myself a Hawkeye fan. Like,
yeah.
Doug's going to be jumping up in his Green Arrow pajamas when he hears this, but
which like, I'm sure he's wearing right now.
I like Green Arrow. Like, I like, you know, that the goatee and everything. Green Arrow. I don't like the new Green Arrow, unfortunately. But when
David, I don't like the posters for the show, they're fairly homoerotic.
But when this new Hawkeye,
I believe
came
he's
out
oiled
with Aja, I was just like, I'm on, let's do this. What, yeah. Female Hawkeye too? Subscribe.
I love that. I loved that first trade. I borrowed that from you. It's like Hawkeye to me is like Saga. I want to read it.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily need to own it.
Yeah, you'll wait for the
and,
trade.
And I just bought. I just bought the oversized hardcover for Mark Waid's Daredevil.
Yeah.
So I was like, I like Daredevil, love Mark Waid.
Yeah.
And honestly, it was one of those where I bought online and that got me to free shipping.
Yeah.
But I've never been a Daredevil fan. I'm probably not going to be.
Yeah.
But I think we're slowly seeing Marvel just overtake DC, and especially with the movies, where the movies are positioned.
Yeah.
But it's just new fans are still going to be Marvel fans.
Even like counting in the books every Tuesday, this is something I really didn't kind of notice until a couple weeks ago, is DC puts out more books than Marvel.
Well, they put out 52.
Right.
Marvel doesn't have that many.
But Marvel
out of 52,
outsells,
how many are Batman titles?
14.
14 of them.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But, and then, like, look at the reverse, look at Marvel, and look how many, like he said, how many Avengers titles are,
how many
Avengers X-Men titles,
how many Spider-Man titles.
How many Spider-Man titles they are. And, you know, like I said,
well, Spider-Man is only a couple, but they come out more than monthly.
Yeah, I mean, you got Superior Spider-Man is more than monthly, but now, yeah,
but now there's a team
up. There's Carnage, Superior Spider-Man team-up, Superior Foes of Spider-Man. Like, there's four or five auxiliary titles now.
They haven't done that to the Fantastic Four, though. They only have Fantastic Four and FF.
Yeah,
but they're not
Fantastic
as popular.
Four's
they
been,
can't really get away never, with it.
But they've had The Thing in the past. They've had...
Well, Fantastic Four is one of those books where it's never hit the heights it did in the 60s. In the 60s, it outsold Amazing Spider-Man, and that's because of Jack Kirby. And it slowly dropped over the 70s. But Fantastic Four, you've never seen more than two titles ever.
Yeah.
You know, in the 80s, in the 70s, you had Marvel 2-in-1, and then Marvel 2-in-1 became the thing, the same way Marvel Team-Up became Web of Spider-Man, because the team-ups weren't selling, but they just kept the main character.
Yeah.
And then when the movie came out, you had Marvel Knights 4 with Sakaza. You had Scotty Young did a Human Torch series. Dan Slott did a Thing series. None of them lasted.
Yeah.
You know, and now when Hickman was doing so well on FF, he was just going to bring the book back to Fantastic Four, and Marvel wanted to sell two books.
Yeah, because
he had enough story, and they really wanted everybody to be finished by Marvel now.
Yeah.
So Hickman was going to do another year on FF, but he said, you know what? If you give me two titles a month, I can do all the issues I need to do before you do the Marvel Now.
Yeah.
And Fraction went twice monthly with Iron
Man.
Yeah,
they do have stuff like the Marvel Now planned about 3 years
out.
Yeah,
and Slott made sure he got that 700 issue and kicked off Superior before Now.
Yeah.
They wanted Marvel Now to be New 52, and it hasn't.
It isn't. They're not quite doing the ballsy thing DC did with the New 52 with the hit the reset button, but they are doing it the same. They're doing what I think DC wants to do more effectively. DC wants to keep old readers and get fresh jumping on points for new readers.
Well, they're going to do another wave too, because Mark Waid's going to move Daredevil to San Francisco and recreate those 70s issues, and they're giving him a new Marvel Now number one.
They're doing it with almost half the Marvel titles are getting renumbered.
You
back
can see
to
the
one.
Link on the Caffeine Comics.
That's right. Caffeine Comics page.
Sorry, Joe was giving me the look like, what are you talking about? San Francisco, what? And I was there's a link on it.
We are over an hour, so that is a plug is a perfect time to end.
That's a perfect time.
I think we haven't plugged the Facebook page enough. Facebook page is doing well. Please.
You know what else we haven't plugged? Steven, where can we find
you? I've got
you?
A plug here.
All right, you have a very special plug for the store.
This December. This is going to be our big promotion for December. Chimera's Comics is having a 20 days of Christmas sale. Each week in December, a different item will be 20% off. This week, from December 4th to December 10th, all HeroClix will be 20% off. If you want to unwrap next week's deal, check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/Chimera's Comics.
And you guys are going to do a different social media every week for a different discount.
Absolutely.
This month, right?
You'll have to tune in to each week. We'll give a hint what the next, well, we won't give a hint. We're going to tell you where to go.
Right.
And I'm telling you, go to the facebook.com/Chimera's Comics page for the following week's sale.
Right. So we may not mention it on the podcast, but we will have it on our Facebook page
between
next week.
Podcasts, the Twitter, Facebook, some other thing I probably don't know anything about. It will be announced.
Great. And the Twitter feed is not on my book, which is our page. I may even retitle it Caffeinated Comics. You, Joe and I were talking about after TARDIS that we should be sending more people there. And guys, thank you so much for adding. We've been seeing a lot. The numbers really jump.
Yeah.
I'd say we probably got like 25% of the number. And the hits are, you know, we have grown on the average. Some do well better than others, but we have grown 400% in the year we have been doing this, and we're coming up on a year anniversary.
Ooh, let's have a cake.
And yeah, we thank you guys for that, and especially when guests come on and they say they've heard of the show and they want to do the show, that means that you guys are listening to it and you guys are telling people, and that you guys are happy that you listen to us, and we really appreciate it. And you know, when we get around New Year's, which will be our anniversary, which is nice, I think we'll do a wrap up and we'll talk about just kind of how things have changed.
Yeah.
But yeah, not on my book is a Twitter feed. And Joe and Dave.
Screw my Twitter feed. Go to Facebook, find Chimera's Comics, find Caffeinated Comics, and like the hell out of them.
Yay.
Yeah. And all Joe's pictures from TARDIS are going up. Ooh. He's going to take more pictures tomorrow. Joe has guaranteed us, if you want to see what he looks like with every companion and every doctor, he's going to upload those pictures that he got today.
Well, there's three doctors.
I'm going to scan.
Well, the three doctors. No, but last year.
I have four. I have Sylvester McCoy from last year. So I'm going to scan in all three photos.
The four doctors can throw them on there.
Right. Yeah. And you know what? We're going to keep things homogenous. Dave has been doing a really good job on the Facebook page. It's for the first time I see things that
you did not post.
That I didn't post and that are relevant and fun and things I didn't see. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, I have to actually go on Facebook and go switch to John Clark again so I can click like on this, because there's nothing douchier than posting something and liking it yourself.
You know what? And I got to say, every time Caffeinated Comics likes something, that's me, because I don't know how to switch it.
Yeah.
I like this, but I'm like, oh, I'm Steven, not Caffeinated Comics.
Every time Caffeinated Comics likes something and then unlikes it, that's me catching Steven.
Right.
Well, just go on Facebook and switch to Steven Brown.
It's hard because I would usually just post stuff on Steven's wall, but then I'm like, all right, this is
relevant also to Caffeinated.
Like that robot thing I posted on your wall today, I'm like, that's not Caffeinated.
No, it's not. That's just to terrify me in my sleep.
Thanks. Yeah, but I see them anyway. But yeah, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you guys next week, and hopefully I'll have a voice.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that, meatball!